Behind the Bite podcast is part of a network of podcasts that are good for the world. Check out podcasts like the Full of Shit podcast, After the First Marriage podcast, and Eating Recovery Academy over at practiceofthepractice.com/network. Welcome to Behind the Bite podcast. This podcast is about the real life struggles women face with food, body image, and weight. We're here to help heal, inspire, and create better, healthier lives. Welcome.
Well, hello, everyone. Welcome to the show. I really appreciate when people reach out to me in a DM and they want to share their stories. As I said, one of the main reasons I started the podcast was so that I could have listeners have the ability to hear other people's stories, because I think that there's so much that can be done when you hear somebody else on here and they're sharing what they've gone through, or shared the thoughts they've had or what they've gone through in terms of their struggles with eating and body image. Because, like I said, when I was going through my eating disorder, we didn't have podcasts. We didn't have all this social media. And, pros and cons, there's so many with social media. But I think that if we can use it for good, then let's do that. And I think that there are a lot of pros with social media and podcasts, and this can be one of those things. And so I really appreciate that today's guest reached out. And I also appreciate that we have another male on the podcast, because I know that, again, one of the main things I'm trying to do is break some of the myths about eating disorders. And one of them is that they are primarily only something that affect females. And so really, really appreciate when a male comes on here, because it does, speak to that eating disorders do not discriminate. They affect everybody of all gender. There is power when somebody does come up and there's multiple voices from, all genders, races, socioeconomic statuses, education level, like just all ages. The more we can hear from people of all walks of life, I think there's more power to that. And I know there's multiple people out there listening of all walks of life as well. So really excited to have today's guest on, and really excited for you all to hear what he has to say. And again, I really appreciate when someone is willing to be vulnerable and open up about what they've been through. So that being said, I want to introduce our guest and then, have him on. Danny O'Connor, he's a professional boxer with a 31-3, 12 knockouts professional record. He's the former WBC International Silver Super lightweight champion. That was a mouthful. New England welterweight champion, and was in line to fight for the WBC World Super Lightweight title in 2018. He was born and raised in Massachusetts, and he began boxing as a teenager and was the national Golden Gloves and U.S. Nationals champion, earning himself as an alternate spot on the 2008 U.S. Olympic team. And he turned pro in the fall of 2008 and became one of the most popular boxers on the New England scene, and he went national. And his star continued to rise, ultimately earning him a world title shot. Currently, O'Connor is in the midst of a boxing comeback, and he also works as a paramedic in Colorado, where he lives with his wife and four children. Danny, I'm so excited to have you here. I always appreciate when people are willing to be vulnerable and come on and share their story. So, and I think we were talking a little bit before we hit record that I always really appreciate when men are willing to come on, because I think there's a myth out there that men don't struggle with eating disorders. And, I love to break myths out there. So, just curious, what got you to the point where you were open and willing to start talking about your story?
Throughout the journey, there's been a lot of suffering as well as growth to try to get to where I am now. But during those times of extreme suffering, I always told myself, if I got to a position where I was able to talk about it comfortably and try to help somebody else, that's like the core reason of why I'm doing this. And, you know, I just feel grateful that I'm in a position now where I can talk about it. And like you were talking about before, my road in eating disorder, there wasn't a lot of guys. I don't even, maybe like two in my whole time that I've actually like got to talk to, and I didn't even have the chance to talk to them more. Is so it was kind of a lonely road. Like, I think eating disorder in itself is a very lonely world in itself, but the fact that I couldn't find a ton of connection with males, I thought, you know, I'm not like unique by any means. I'm no different than anybody else. If I struggled this bad over, you know, years and years and years, I'm sure there's other people too. And if being in a position where I can say something or relate and it can help somebody else maybe overcome some struggles that they have, I always tell myself that's what I want to do. So I guess that's why I'm here right now. I kind of just one day was like, you know what? I want to start telling my story and talking about it, and maybe I can help a couple of people. Let me Google, you know, what are the top 10 best podcasts for eating disorder? And so then what, you must be doing really good because yours came up. So I just emailed you off Instagram. I emailed like, I don't know, four or five of them. And I was just like, hey, I'd love to talk about my story and see if I could help people. And a couple of people got back to me, and this is where I am right now.
Well, I'm very honored. I didn't know that, but I'm really yeah. grateful that you're here. So I'm actually curious, did you know you had an eating disorder, or like at what point did you actually realize you had one?
So I knew 2012 is when I really was like, okay, holy shit, I think I have an eating disorder. And then I was like, holy shit, what is an eating disorder? Because I didn't really know anything about it. So the same way that I had these episodes of eating and restriction was basically the same way that I drank alcohol too. Because during my professional boxing and amateur boxing, when it was kind of at the highest level, it was all day, every day boxing when it was in training camp. So I would have these times where I would get ready to fight and it would be extreme dedication, no drinking, strict diet, training. It was 100% focused on the fight. And then when the fight got over, I would have X amount of time till the next fight. And during that fight, before I had to go into training camp, it's almost like I had to get everything in for all the stuff that I missed out on or the restrictions I put on myself during training camp. So this is when I would be real unhealthy. I would eat whatever I want. I would eat ice cream, whatever it may be, that wasn't on the strict regimen that was getting me ready for a fight. And the same thing with beer. I didn't drink at all during training camp. So the training camp for a boxing match could be anywhere from, you know, 6 weeks, 8 weeks, depending on how long it takes. So, you know, I wouldn't drink. I was fully focused on training, being the most optimal I possibly could be for the ring. And then when I got done with the fight, I would then go off the deep end, binge on food, binge on beer, whatever I could do in my off time, because then I knew, and you know, I don't know, a month, 2 months, 3 months, I'd have to go back into training camp, take all that weight off that I gained, and then kind of do the whole thing again. So that's how it's been forever. And so I think alcohol, like everybody knows alcohol is bad. It was never good for me, but I didn't necessarily have an issue with it until I was like, you know what, I'm not going to drink anymore. And then when I decided to stop drinking and I stopped drinking, the food was left. And when that came to the surface and I realized, you know, holy shit, I can't control this. You know what I mean? That's when I really noticed that, like, okay, I have a problem now. And that was back in 2012 when I was in Texas. But I think way before that, it was just overshadowed. I didn't understand eating disorder. I didn't know that it could happen to males. I didn't have any education about it until it kind of was already in me. You know what I mean? So, you know, you look at like how I was born. You know, I'm Irish and I'm Italian, and I grew up in like a suburb outside of Boston, and my whole street was all relatives, right? That Irish Catholic family. I had my aunts across the street, my grandmas. There were six houses. It was all family. And my two great aunts were Italian, and they were, and the core of them was just food all day long. All they do is prepare, cook. It was an answer to everything. So I can remember being a kid, you know, I don't know, grade school ages, where I would go over there and I get some cookies or whatever it would be, but you know, it would be like a package of cookies, you know, the whole box of cereal. So I think these eating habits of kind of overconsumption started so early. And then when I got into high school, you know, 14 years old, I was a standout wrestler. And so that's when the restrictions came into play. It wasn't just the overeating, now it was the restrictions. And then from being a high level wrestler, then I kind of went straight into boxing. And then boxing, you know, I turned pro in 2008. That's when I went to the Olympics. So you're looking, you know, 2004, maybe I turned pro until now. So that's a long time going back and forth from restriction, binging, restriction, purging, what it may be. And so in 2012, when I decided that I had an issue and I needed help for it, it was actually a Joe Rogan podcast that kind of kicked the whole thing off. I can't remember. He was talking to like Rich Roll or someone, and it was all about, you know, I think it was the gist of it, like he wasn't happy, so he made changes, hard changes that a lot of people, you know, may not want to do because they're uncomfortable. And it was right at the time where basically I was getting ready to fight on Fox Sports One, and it was a big fight. It was a couple of different promotion companies that are high up in the sport of boxing. And I remember getting ready for that fight, and I had no control over any of my issues with eating, with my emotions. And it got to a point where I was so overwhelmed with the idea of having to weigh in, probably not going to make weight for the fight, being on national TV, that I actually quit the sport of boxing. I quit the sport of boxing. I went home, and after listening to that Rogan podcast, I kind of went on this this journey to figure out this eating disorder and how I could kind of get my life back. Because at this point, I was a slave to it. It controlled all my moves, basically. And all my moves on a daily basis revolved around food, how I was going to get it, the scale. And I didn't have control over it. And at this point, I was pretty miserable. So, you know, I went on this journey to kind of figure myself out, right? Because I always thought at the beginning, it's, you know, from what I learned early on, an eating disorder was just a manifestation of all this other stuff that might be going on in you, whether it's trauma or, you know, emotional or all this stuff within you. So I think I started with a sports psychologist. That was an easy one for me because I was boxing, or I had been boxing after I was out for about a year and I went back to the sport. But I started with a sports psychologist.
I'm wondering if you could go back for a minute, though. So, sure. Like, because this is like a big buildup, it sounds like, right? And sounds like for you, like as a kid, and you know, I was raised full-blooded Italian too. So, like, food is like a lot of things, right? It's not just food; it's like the love and family and everything, right? And I'm just imagining you as like this teenager as a wrestler, and you know, I had friends who were in wrestling in junior high and high school, and I just saw them doing all sorts of really, like looking back, dangerous things to make weight.
Wicked dangerous.
Thought that those things were normal. And, you know, maybe if you could talk to that a little bit, because I'm sure there's people listening who maybe even now they're teenagers or wrestling and don't know that what they're doing is leading them down a very dangerous path to make weight, because it seems like it's normalized.
You know what? I look back. So in my professional boxing career, even when I went to the hospital in 2018, it wasn't my most dangerous point because I had some education. And even though I was pushing the line of unhealthy and potentially deadly, I knew those limits somewhat. I was at my most dangerous, the most risk during wrestling when I was 14, 15, 16 years old. Because I had no education and I didn't know what I was doing and I had no idea how it was affecting my body, my mental health, anything. So, and I can't put that on anyone but me because, you know, I was a state champ sophomore year, Division I state champ, and I started wrestling freshman year. I made varsity and I was kind of a standout. Same thing with boxing. I made the Olympic team for boxing maybe, I don't know, 3 years after I ever picked up a pair of gloves. So the same thing for wrestling. I went right into it And I went to these high limits where competition was, it meant something, right? Because you're going to national tournaments, you're representing maybe your state or your country, whatever it may be. So they were high stakes wrestling matches. And I had no idea what I was doing when it came to making a weight class. And that's from being uneducated, from being a kid and not having anyone kind of guide me. And I can't put it on coaches or anybody else because it was me. And it was me kind of in secret. It wasn't something that I was displaying, you know, because I had a fear that maybe I wouldn't be able to wrestle that weight class, or I wouldn't be able to keep my varsity spot, or maybe it was some self-confidence stuff. Maybe I didn't think I would be as good at a higher weight class. I always had self-confidence issues, even before the eating stuff. So, and during wrestling, the only reason why I was a state champ sophomore year and a varsity freshman year, and then junior year, I kind of quit, basically. I basically quit and dropped out of school. Wrestling was so miserable. All I did was starve myself. I had no idea what proper nutrition was. I just figured whatever goes in has to come out, right? So, I mean, there was times when I wouldn't eat for days. I would drink very minimal water. I would try to sweat all that water out. I would wear sauna suits. I would use laxatives. You know, and then I would try to binge eat some sort of nutrition back into myself to then go compete. And so I put my body through a lot, and I vowed to myself that I didn't ever want to do anything that had to do with a scale ever again in my life. That's how strict and how much wrestling kind of put me back. I want nothing to do with it. Then I kind of found boxing, and I was like, all right, I love this too, but it does have to deal with the scale. I'm going to totally try to change my ways and be more healthy, right? Because I knew, looking back now, that some of the stuff I did in high school wrestling without censorship was super unhealthy. It put me at risk and potentially could have killed me multiple times. And I didn't want that to happen for me in wrestling. And so, you know, I vowed, like, I'm never going to take laxatives again, which, you know, I didn't stick to really any of these rules. You know what I mean? I tried to be healthier. I tried to gain knowledge about proper nutrition. And it was a good idea at the time, but it didn't stick out that way because I always had to make weight however I had to make it, sometimes better than others, other times better than others. But at the end, when the eating disorder, I didn't have any control, that's when I was the most unhealthy because I would put so much weight on and I had to take it off. And sometimes I had to take it off fast. So, you know, for anyone that, and now that I'm a first responder and a medic and I had to go to school to get my paramedic license, I see all these electrolyte imbalances and things that people do to their bodies when they maybe don't have the proper nutrition or overconsumption of water, of like all these things that, like, when I see, I'm like, holy shit, man, I'm lucky that I didn't kill myself on multiple occasions. So my advice to anybody, especially kids, you don't ever need to worry about a number on a scale to compete in a sport, whether it's boxing, wrestling. I'm just talking about the ones that I've had to deal with, right? You can wrestle, and I'll give you the perfect example. My son came home, and he made the wrestling team, and he could have been on varsity. He was so excited, first year, right? He's in sixth grade, and he tells me, yeah, Dad, I made the varsity team. It's amazing. And I'm like, all right, how much, you know, what did you make it at? Well, I made it at 90 pounds. Like, all right. So I took him in the bathroom, gets on the scale. He's 96 pounds. And I'm like, it's not happening. You're not losing 1 pound to go wrestle a kid. You're going to train harder. You're going to have better nutrition. You're going to wrestle whatever you are. So a scale is not a problem. And then you can be the best that you are. And if you win, you win. You lose, you lose. But I think a lot of the time, that's not the view that I had coming into wrestling. It's not the view that I had going into boxing. When I turned pro in 2000, well, actually not even when I turned pro. So when I started boxing, you know, right out of high school, I started at 140 pounds and I kept that weight all the way until basically, my whole career. Like my last fight that I just fought in March was at 147 and I weighed 144 pounds. So I kept that weight my whole career. And the eating disorder in me, when it was at a time of being uncontrollable, made it impossible to deal with.
So for people who don't know much about, you know, the weight and the necessity to, or the pressure, I guess, to make weight, you know, because typically I don't talk numbers or put weight out there on the podcast because it can get triggering, but I think there's a purpose to it in, you know, you talking about it, because there's this pressure to be in a certain, like, you know, category for certain fights, right? What was the pressure you felt to maintain a certain weight? Like, what if you, like you were talking about your son being a certain weight, saying, oh, you know, no, you're going to maintain this weight and not go less. Was there a pressure for you to weigh less so that you could have a different opponent? Like, what was that like? So for people who don't really understand what that pressure was like for you.
I think the pressure came in the fact that this is the weight class I was. That's probably how much I weighed at the time or close to it. I knew I could already lose weight because of wrestling, so I probably lost a little bit. But then when you start campaigning at that weight class, that's your weight class. You know, I won the national Golden Gloves twice at that weight class. I was an Olympian alternate at that weight class. Then when I went pro, you know, you're fighting based on that weight class. You're getting ranked at that weight class. Now I'm ranked in all these different organizations that have to do with your world rankings of possibly winning a world championship belt down the road. So like, as you campaign and the more and more you invest in the sport, the more you're kind of, you know, in the sport of boxing, the more you're kind of invested in that weight. And, you know, a lot of the time people do whatever they do at that weight. And then after they've won that whole weight, they might move up or wherever the competition is or the bigger fights, right? Because a lot of boxing is a business as well, not just a sport. So the big fights, they might, you know, be one weight class apart. They might meet up. But for me, because I kind of stepped away from the sport multiple times, had so many issues on my own, I was never able to kind of reach the potential in those dreams that I had hoped, being a world champion and, you know, kind of being that, you know, everything you sign up for the sport of boxing, right? You want to win a bunch of money, be super famous, fight on, be the face of whatever, and win world championship belts. Well, I could never figure myself out to get in a position to keep the consistency to do that. So I kind of always kept campaigning where I was potentially going to do that in the future if I did it. And I don't know, it could be a self-confidence thing. I think, you know, I've always had self-confidence issues and, you know, I think that's just kind of the pressure that was on me that, you know, and a lot of that pressure I put on myself. I mean, not anybody, I could have went any weight class I wanted to. You know what I mean? It was my decision. I'm the boss of myself in the sport of professional boxing. But I think it was just a personal thing.
So, you know, you must have had a lot of people around you, trainers and other people. So did anyone pick up on what was going on with you?
So in my earlier years, people definitely picked up. I mean, they knew my binge episodes post-fight were not something normal. And they knew the starvation and everything that I did to myself in training camp was not normal, right? I think a lot of people do it in the sport. You know what I mean? A lot of people do it. Maybe some of the people that aren't as educated on how to make weight the right way and try to do it in unhealthy ways. So I've seen it before and a lot of people did it like I did it, you know? But what was the question again? I forgot, sorry.
Well, I was just wondering, well, I guess it's a two-part question. One is, did anyone pick up on what you were saying?
Yeah, that's it.
Right. But also, I mean, just kind of based on what you just said, did you start doing these things because it was kind of what everyone else was doing? I mean, you must have learned it
from Yeah. So I think it is like a lot of people, you know, I came up and saw other people doing what I was doing. So everybody does it different. That's the thing about making weight in the sport with a scale. Like, there's so many different ways to do it. Everyone has their own tricks. And so I saw a bunch of stuff as I went to different camps and started, you know, fighting all over the world, as opposed to, you know, I got to see how they did it in Russia when I was part of USA versus Russia. And we got to go there for a couple of weeks. And, you know, I got to see how everyone did it. But 2012, when it came out to me, it's when it came out to other people too. So in my earlier years, they obviously knew what I was doing wasn't healthy and wasn't normal. There was nothing normal about it. These crazy nights of consumption of everything, and then the restriction for months. And in 2012, I was in more of an elite camp. His name's Ronnie Shields, and he coached like Mike Tyson and Evander Holyfield and like all these known people. And so they put you on the scale every day. I was on the scale every day in the morning after, you know, after you work out, they monitor your weight, know where you are whenever you're in training camp getting ready for a fight, because they want to make sure that you're not trying to take too much weight off or nothing. And so I couldn't control my eating at home in training camp. I could not control it. And so it reflected on the scale every day. And, you know, I finally had to come out to my team at that time and be like, hey, listen, I got a problem. I don't understand this. You know what I mean? I cannot. You think of it, right? Like, if you don't want to drink, you don't have to buy alcohol, right? So you don't have to have it in your house. But food is different. I couldn't control how much I ate, but I can't. Like, you need to eat to function. So, like, I guess it would be like quitting drinking, but still having to drink two beers a day while you're quitting. Like, that's what it felt like for me. And I didn't understand it. So, like, when I'm talking to other guys and I'm like, hey, it's not drugs, it's not alcohol, it's food. I don't know how to control it. I can't control it. I can't stop eating. I didn't understand it. And I felt like no one's going to understand what I'm talking about. I don't understand it. They're not going to understand like something as simple as food. But when it's embedded in you, when these habits are built up, you know, years after years and just reinforced and reinforced, and it's so deep down in you that it's not in your control anymore, and you're just making these moves without the ability to control it. It was a huge problem, and I didn't understand it, and I'm not sure if they did, but that's kind of when it came out. And I still didn't really talk to about it, other than the self journey that I went through when I quit the sport of boxing, because I quit twice, once for a year and then once for 5 years. And each time was kind of, you know, the first time I quit was more like, you know, I got into meditation. I read a book about that. I took a mindfulness-based reduction, stress reduction. It was like 8 weeks at UMass Memorial. That was cool because I was, you know, I was an athlete too, so it helped with my focus. And then I started like therapy with all these self-help modalities, like Kristen Neff and Chris Germer had one. I went to like a 7-day retreat in Sedona, and I tried to figure all this stuff out. Then when I quit for 5 years, it was at the point where I almost lost my life. And now I seek professional help, like your traditional style therapy. You know, I went to a intensive outpatient program at an eating disorder facility that was like, you know, 1 o'clock in the afternoon till 9 o'clock every day. There was like some pain therapy and a whole bunch of different stuff with that. You know, I went to like OA and that type of meeting, trying to find some connection. And so that was more, that 5 years that I just did was more like professional help, like actual professional help.
So it sounds like you were trying to seek the advice of people around you, but it sounds like maybe they didn't really know what you were struggling with so much, even though it sounds like maybe you tell me, like, in the boxing world, would you say that people do have disordered eating or eating disorders, but nobody's really talking about it with each other?
I don't know. I never talked about it with anybody, and I never heard anyone talk about it with me. I saw other people being unhealthy just like I was, but it, you know, you're kind of just doing a job. You're doing what you got to do to make weight, and everyone's in a different position of knowledge and access to food and whatever it may be. So I honestly never spoke about an eating disorder or no one else spoke to me about it until I started seeking help for myself. And even then, when I was doing that, I tried to like let a couple people know here and there, but at the same time, right, that's my business and my profession. So a lot of the time I spoke about it personally, but I didn't want to speak about it professionally because I didn't want it to affect my career. I didn't want people to think that like I couldn't make weight or I wasn't going to show up for fights, right? Because it's a business just as much as a sport. So like, if you're not accountable, right, if you're always never making weight or doing whatever, then you're not going to be, it's going to be hard for someone to invest in you, right? Because, you know, look what happened in 2018 when I ended up in the hospital. That whole show was canceled and a lot of people missed out and this and that. So I didn't want it to affect my career negatively. So I talked about it way more personally, like, you know, therapist people, people that had to do with eating disorders and my wife. Originally, for that first time when I tried to do all that work on myself, I realized that I had to go to the actual experts in the eating disorder field and figure out more about this and myself and what I had to do to get my normal life back.
So I'm wondering, you, before you were on the podcast, you had sent me a picture that was, you know, pretty scary, yeah, of you in the hospital. Was that the time in 2018 you're talking about?
Yeah, so I was slated to fight for the WBC World Championship belt, which is, you know, everything I signed up from the first day I put on a pair of gloves. Like, that's like the World Series of baseball for boxing. And I finally got that opportunity. And it was like kind of right on the cusp of where I just, in my early days, I could change it real fast. Like, I would binge for so long, but then I would knew I would have to go into training camp and I would restrict for so long. And I had no problem changing that right away, right? Binge, stop, restrict all the way through camp. As my eating disorder and these habits got more reinforced over years and years and years, the time where I could do that stopped. Like, you know, I would try to stop binge eating so I could restrict to make weight, but I couldn't stop eating. So like, there would be no more windows of one or the other. They meshed together too much and I had no control over my eating. So it was easier for me to go completely abstinent and not eat than try to eat portions or have balance in it, right? So, and but at the same time, I've been waiting for this shot at a world championship belt my whole life, and so I wanted to do it. I wanted to fight. I wanted to compete. So I tried to make weight for it, and ultimately, I couldn't stop eating during camp. I had a camp where the people around me weren't at the elite level, so no one had to ask me anything. I just tried to train, and I couldn't stop eating. And then when I went down to California for the fight, I completely stopped eating. So I had multiple days without any food. I had multiple days without any water. You know, I was multiple pounds overweight the day of the weigh-in. I sat in the sauna for hours. I wore the suit. I took, you know, upwards of 10 pounds off in that morning. And ultimately, I got sent to the hospital. The paramedics picked me up in my hospital in the hotel room because I collapsed. And so the hospital was worried about, you know, major like organ failure. I was so dehydrated. And so they kept me in the hospital for a little bit. But I remember, you know, sitting in my hospital bed and reading the ESPN, the news. It like was a whole story how I didn't make weight for the fight. And I just felt, you know, first of all, I felt very bad. I like, you know, I worked my whole life for that moment and I didn't even get the chance to compete. You know what I mean? I didn't even get to fight, win or lose. I don't know. I didn't make it to the scale. And at the same time, I'm lucky to be alive. I passed out in my hotel. You know, it was potentially deadly. The paramedics had to, you know, right away they put the, so I'm a medic and, you know, they put a 12 lead on. So as soon as they start putting the stickers on you, you know that they're worried about your heart or whatever, right? Because they're taking a picture of your heart. So, you know, it really, really made me open my eyes to be like, I have four kids now. You know, it was two at that time, a beautiful wife. And I don't want to lose my life to a sport, right? And I don't want to lose my life to an eating disorder. And so when that happened, And that was what that picture was from. That was in my hospital room when they were giving me all the IVs and trying to rehydrate me and, you know, checking my liver and all these different things to make sure that I didn't do irreversible damage. That's when my eyes opened of like, all right, you know, this is so serious. Like, I already knew it was serious, but this is now so serious that I need professional help. And that's when I took 5 years off, when I came home, when I got, you know, multiple different avenues of professional help, and got to a point where, you know, I'm not bulimic anymore. I don't binge eat and I don't purge. I exercise normally and I don't restrict. And I don't restrict anything. So, but I didn't know, I didn't think I was ever going to get to that point, because a lot of the time you hear through traditional therapy, like, you know, maybe something lingers, or this might be the new way of life forever. And so many times I beat my head against the wall trying to figure this thing out and get to a point. And a lot of there was a couple of times when I was like, I don't know if this is ever going to change. I don't know if I can, this might just be the new way of life. But continued work on myself, continued learning, continued knowledge allowed me to keep, you know, being self-aware and keep figuring stuff out until I got to a point where I got my life back. And that's where I'm at right now. And I'm still trying to figure my story out. This really is the first time I've ever told my story, I guess. So I'm still like figuring it all out and kind of putting it together as I go. It's been a long journey and a long road. There's a lot of depth within me, you know what I mean?
Well, eating disorders are complex, and I know I appreciate you sharing it, you know, with me in the audience. And I know it's not easy to share. You know, I grappled with it myself if I wanted to start the podcast and, you know, share my own story. So I understand completely. It's very complicated. People think it's about food and weight, and it's so much more. And I do appreciate what you said, that, you know, the message out there is, oh, you're always going to kind of have it a little bit. And one of the big things I always say on the podcast is, please don't buy into that. Please don't believe in that, because if you believe in that, it has a lot of power. And so to hear you say, you know, you're in a place now where you're fully recovered and you're beyond that and you're not struggling with some lingering parts of it is really powerful for people to hear, and to really, you know somebody like yourself who's gone through all the work and to get to the place in your life where you're at is so inspirational and gives people hope. So I really appreciate that you're sharing that.
Well, thank you. But I don't want to give too much credit because there still is a couple, I think, emotional things that I deal with. There's still some serious body image, dysmorphia stuff. And this is kind of like the mental aspect of the eating disorder for me. I mean, there was a time when I was in Texas, and I was in a training camp. So I was by myself, and my wife and child were home in Massachusetts. I wouldn't turn the bathroom lights on for almost a year and a half. I had to shower in the dark. I had to do everything in the dark unless it was shaved. And if it was shaved, I had to wear full clothing. So I still have all these issues related to how I view myself. And so these are things now that I'm working through, like, you know, what it is to be healthy, to look healthy, to feel healthy, and trying to sift through these false images that I have that can feel very real sometimes. And when they feel very real, they can be known to get caught up in your emotion to make you feel bad. And I don't like that. I don't like the way that those images make me feel. And for too long, they kind of dictated my moves, which I didn't like even more. So those are the things, you know, I'm not binge eating, I'm not restricting, and I'm not purging. And that to me is a win, because, for so long I was a slave to it. It was my all day, every day. And I didn't know at one time if it was ever going to change. I thought my life was going to be lost. So for me to be in a normal place now and live a normal life is amazing. And so all this emotional stuff, that's stuff that I can deal with. And I actually like dealing with that. I think, you know, a part of me goes on this, you know, decade long self-discovery, turning every rock I can up to find out what I can find to be better and to improve. And so there has to be a part of me that actually that likes that improvement, even though it was uncomfortable. And a lot of the time I didn't like it. I suffer from anxiety, where I have dealt with a lot of anxiety throughout my whole life. And it has been manifested into these pretty massive panic attacks where I feel like I'm dying and pass out sometimes. So being able to work through all of these different things, even if they weren't eating disorder related, it's all related. So I'm blessed that I've been able to kind of just get to where I am from where I was, and now be in a position where, I don't know, maybe I can give someone else a little connection who needs it. Because I think that's the thing in the early on years that it was hard for me. I couldn't find a ton of connection, right? Like when I went to that outpatient program for the eating disorder facility, I was the only male. A lot of the time I was the only male. And so like, it was hard for me to seek out that connection. Like, it was hard for me to do that. So I thought that if I could be that person, maybe other people that are struggling would be able to hear my words and find that connection that I kind of lack getting a little bit.
No, and that's really, like I said, why I appreciate you being on here. I think if more people are vocal and more people are willing to share what they go through, just like I know a lot of people do struggle also with anxiety as well as eating disorder. And, you know, people don't really share these things. There's a lot of shame. There's a lot of secrecy. There's a lot of worry about, gosh, if I open up about this, am I going to be judged, or what are people going to think? And so when someone like comes on here, like yourself, and shares these things, and then someone might be at home listening going, oh, okay, there's some relief there. I think of, okay, maybe I can open up. Maybe I can seek help. I think that's very powerful. And maybe if you had somebody along the way who, you know, had spoken up and said what they were doing, or you could have shared what you were doing and they had said, oh yeah, me too, this is what I need, this is what I did to get past this, I don't know if that would have helped you or been powerful for you. But
I think it definitely would have helped. I mean, I think connection is super important. You know, if you see someone else struggling like you are with the same issues, and you see what they did, you don't feel so alone. Okay, someone else knows what it is to feel like this. You know what I mean? So I think if I had that, it would have just been nice. It wouldn't have been so lonely some days. I don't know that it would have just been nice. You know what I mean? Because I felt very alone in my walkthrough. I felt alone, and I felt very less than at times. It's weird. Like, you know, everybody knows, you know, alcohol is bad, drugs are bad, all these things are really bad. People that get hooked on them, they go to, you know, treatment, they get programs. And then having no education about food, right? I'm thinking like, oh, it's just food. But something that controls your every move, and two, that it's such a social, emotional problem to where you're at the point of, you know, either losing your life from your habits or taking your own life because of the misery. It doesn't matter what it is. If something is that bad, it's a huge, huge problem. And so I just had no idea. I had no idea until these habits were so reinforced in me. I just had no idea that eating disorders are crazy. They're crazy.
You know, for you, it sounds like it was even more complicated because, you know, you were in the profession and making weight was, you know, something you felt the pressure you had to do. And so food was very much tied to, you know, what you were doing for a living. And, you know, that sounded like it was even more difficult for you.
Yeah. I mean, I've been married to the scale since I've been 12 years old, mm-hmm. You know what I mean? And my life has revolved around my weight, what number is on the scale, what number it has to be, what number it is now, what goes in my mouth, what comes out. So, you know, my life has been revolved around that. And so that's because it's a sport. Like, it gives me so much more compassion for a female, because you kind of like, I don't know, you have like a society, maybe like a cultural like view of like, you know, a skinny woman or something. And women have to match up against that every single day. It's not like just a sport. Like if I had quit the sport, I would have never been against the scale again. I probably would have never thought about it again. But women have to deal with this stuff for the rest of their life. And to be up against something like that, it's just, there's not one time, even now, I can't not put something in my mouth without thinking how it affects my weight or my body or my mental state, right? Those are the three things that I worry about. And so those are still things that I'm working towards. Like hopefully one day I can just eat freely. And so I'm not there yet. However, it feels really good to talk about my situation and hopefully more people hear it. I don't know.
Well, like I said, I really appreciate you being on here. You know, it's amazing to have you, you know, come on here and share these things. And I'm just wondering if there's any final last words that you think anyone needs to know. I know you shared a lot already, but I don't know if you have any final words.
No, I don't know. I'm still like new to this. I don't have like a closing line, but I would just say for anybody that's struggling, find out. You know what I mean? It's not going to be easy. It's definitely not going to be easy. It's going to be scary. It's going to be uncomfortable. But the first step is just kind of asking for help. You know what I mean? And just having faith that you can get through it and get better if you want to. And so that's really all. I have a special limit for compassion because I know how bad the suffering is. I was in it. I'm sure you were, and a lot of other people out there now. It's miserable and it's lonely. And I just hope that people can find connection, get out, get some help, and make some changes if they're not living the life that they want to.
And are you on social media? Do you want people to follow you? Are they following you?
Yeah, I mean, so I want to write a book. Okay. And I'm dealing with an agent right now. And I have a co-author who is from New York, who has wrote a couple books. And so really, in 2012, when I was in Texas and in the training camp, it was probably one of the darkest of my times. And I remember reading a book, and it wasn't about eating disorders. It was about Josh Hamilton. He was a baseball player, and he got hooked on drugs, and he left the sport, and he came back. And I remember reading that book, and that book kept me going. And that's how I think my journey went. Like, I wasn't always like gung ho to like grow and go through the uncomfort to be the best I could be. A lot of the time it was just a little foothold that I got in, and I got that in different ways. Maybe the sports psychologist told me something, or I had done something in mindful meditation that I liked. And during that time in Texas, it was Josh Hamilton's book. It was just a little foothold that gave me a little hope and to keep going. And I think that's the number one theme through my whole story, is like, I never, ever lost hope, ever, ever. Like, I always had a part of me being like, I'm going to get better. I'm going to get over this, no matter how much time it takes, no matter how much work it takes, no matter where I got to go, I'm going to get over this and get my life back so I can be the best me. And so even on the darkest times, I still had like a little glimmer of hope that they kept me going to the next day to keep putting one foot in front of the next. And for people at home, I mean, it's hard because some of those days are really dark. However, you just need that one little sliver of hope, because you just never know what tomorrow is going to bring.
So true. So people do want to find you on social media.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I'm so bad at social media. It's the real Danny O'Connor. And I only have Instagram right now. I'm not wicked good at it. I don't really know what I'm doing. I make my wife do posts most of the time. But hopefully I'll gain a little bit of a following, and I'll start to learn so that I can find I'm just trying to find the most outlets that I can to speak my story, so that hopefully I can get it to the farthest reach of people, I guess.
No, that's great. And, you know, continuing to speak up and share your story will definitely hopefully
help people.
So thank you so much for being here. I really appreciate it.
Well, thank you for having me.
This podcast is designed to provide accurate and authoritative information in regards to the subject matter covered. It is given with the understanding that neither the host, the publisher, or the guests are rendering legal, accounting, clinical, or any other professional information. If you want a professional, you should find one.